Welcome back to Palisade Radio. I'm your host, Tom Bodrovics, and joining me today is returning guest Mark Magarian. He's a VP and Portfolio Manager at Wells Fargo Advisors. How are you today, Mark?
Thank you for having me.
Great to have you back. Recently, we've seen the balance sheet expansion of the Fed of more than $3 trillion, and we've also seen gold break out on the $1,760 level. It seems like the fundamentals have really been set up for gold to keep going to all-time highs. How are you seeing this situation develop?
I think that, you know, we were very bullish on gold, everything that had set it up prior to this recent setup, obviously triggered by the issues of COVID and how that affected the market. But I think that even the biggest bull of gold, who'd anticipated that there'd be a Fed reaction, you know, in the next downturn, probably did not forecast that $3 trillion would have been created pretty much out of thin air in the space of 3 months. Not to mention the government setting themselves on a monstrous deficit road simultaneous to that. So, you know, all things being equal, yes, gold looks like it's on the cusp of a breakout, but given what we know they've done, I mean, I'd say that gold is maybe, see, it seems a lot lower to me here at 1700 with what I know now than it did at 1500 with what I didn't know was about to happen.
Absolutely. So what are some of the fundamentals as you're seeing them from your perspective that have really set this bull market up?
Well, I remember, back pretty much, I mean, I've been a gold bull for about 20 years. Let me just state that. But where things really started to tick for me in terms of understanding what was going to happen down the line was probably in about 2013, 2014. Gold price had begun to have a pretty decent correction. And you started to see a lot of physical gold flow out of the Western vaults and go to China. And you saw, it basically being replaced with paper claims on the Western side of the ledger. And aside from the fact that the fundamental drivers of gold, were still in place in terms of the debt cycle and where the Federal Reserve had been going and where it was likely to go in the future, it seemed to me that gold was an asset that was almost like it was in like an inverted pyramid, okay, like a Ponzi scheme, except for when it breaks, instead of collapsing, the price would explode. And effectively like a giant short squeeze waiting to happen. And once I'd figured that out, it was a case of, okay, well, what's the time scale here? What are we waiting for? And how do we best play it? And, once the gold price had bottomed in 2016 and began effectively a basing period before the breakout that we've experienced really in the last 9 months, it was clear that a testing of the highs was definitely on the cards the moment that the credit cycle turned, the stock market cycle turned, and you started to see the Fed walk back their tightening and go back to what they do best, which is just debase and attempt to bail everyone out. Now, the pace of these actions lately have been so vast and ham-handed. For me, $2,000 gold this year is I'd be absolutely shocked if we did not see it. And, you're starting to see all the right types of investors put their hand up and say, I'm getting into gold. This is the right thing to do. While you're still not seeing a huge retail participation. So the setup still seems rather early, even if it looks like we've had a pretty decent run.
What do you think are some possible catalysts for the retail or the quote unquote Robin Hood investor to get into this space?
Well, I don't know if I can speak for the Robin Hood investor. That's a whole new creature. I'm just sort of learning about with everyone else. I mean, it seems to me that it's got to go bankrupt before they get interested. So I'm not sure any of the gold miners I'm looking at are anywhere near bankruptcy. They probably would have interested in it in these things 5 years ago. It would have like pumped them all up nicely. But right now they may be a little too boring for them. But just like any bubble, when that stage does come, you're going to see Robin Hood people pile in. You're going to see, my mom calling me up and saying, hey, what about gold stocks? You're going to get all these different telltale signs, but we're still a way away from there. But yes, when with the Robinhood phenomenon. You know, it'd be interesting to see what happens to some of the gold stocks when that crowd gets involved. I'm sure, just like with everything else that has been touched by that particular corner of mania, that all fundamentals will go out the window and it basically becomes a DraftKings gambling instrument. Yeah, I guess we'll know it when we see it, and we'll see what we do about it when that time comes. Yeah, I think it seems still a way before, you know, certainly that kind of retail, you know, puts its nose in this area.
Do you think that hitting a new all-time high for gold could bring that type of interest to the space, though?
Yes, I mean, I think a new all-time high in gold is going to bring a lot of interest to the space. I think that if there's one thing we've gotten from all the different situations, let me just describe it as that, all the different situations going on right now in the world, that herd mentality is alive and well in the human race, and we're just as inconsistent with our decision making in periods of fear or mob mania than we ever have been. That's all well and good, and that certainly suggests that, you know, just like always, when, you know, people don't want to buy gold today, but of course when it hits a new all-time high, everyone suddenly wants in because they like to look at it and, you know, look in the rearview mirror and go, oh yeah, I wish I'd done that, Mark said so, let's go do it now. It's like, well, you know, probably when gold smashes 2000, it's probably going to take a breather. I mean, even with that not being my long-term top forecast or anything, but you know, gold goes through its own waves just like any other asset, and I'm sure when it finally does punch through and everyone piles in, there'll probably need be a little bit of a digestion period, but we'll see. I mean, it depends what the catalyst is. By the time we get there, it could end up running a little further, but we'll have to see. The older I get, the less I try and be too much of a seer, as that doesn't always work, and just have a good idea of roughly what's going to happen and why, and stick to your guns and, you know, let it play out and make some decisions if you feel things have gone too far in either direction.
Interesting. Do you see playing silver and silver miners as more of an asymmetrical bet in contrast to gold?
I mean, silver, yeah, yes, I wouldn't disagree with that statement. I do think that silver obviously offers a lot more leverage. Yeah, as far as silver is concerned, I mean, obviously the silver relative to the price of gold is very, very cheap. And if that be some method of assessing silver's current value, a lot of silver miners have lagged and they're only just starting to get going. And there aren't that many of them. I do feel that silver is sort of more of an end game situation. Either it's probably going to do the best relative to gold in a really very inflationary end game, or just simply when these Robin Hooders show up or there's a big mania, silver tends to get the action. It's smaller, it's more easily moved, and some of the big blow-offs we've seen in history, you know, silver's done some pretty crazy stuff before then, obviously having big corrections too. So I have a portion in the silver pace as sort of an option of sorts, a perpetual option that, you know, whenever silver becomes flavor of the month, I'm gonna make some extra beta there and hopefully be smart enough to know when to sell. But I certainly think silver, you know, it certainly here still represents pretty good value from a from an investment perspective.
So as you're talking about the structure of how you put your portfolio together, how do you go about thinking about actually investing in gold? Are you more interested in the big producers? Are you interested in the explorers? How do you go about making those decisions?
Okay, well, at heart, I'm a value investor and I like cash flow. I want to be able to identify that the jurisdiction is safe enough, that the reserves are big enough, the management are legit and, you know, are engaged and are doing the right thing, and that ultimately the company, you know, spits out free cash flow and that the multiple to that free cash flow is appropriate. So that's pretty much where I start with any investment, and you know, definitely so in terms of the mining space. Now, sure, there are going to be exploration plays that do fantastic, but they are honestly, you know, I'm not a geologist, you know, so I don't pretend to understand every single thing one would need to understand about, you know, some of these explorers where there's very little information. But when a company's making money, it isn't that hard to understand. And with good management, they can explain and predict what one should be expecting out of the mine and what kind of cash flows you should expect. My focus is definitely more on the sort of the medium and large producers, but with a sprinkle of some of the smaller producing companies with some silver in there. It just helps me sleep at night, and you know, I'm not going to wake up and one of these things has just died. So that's been where my focus is, and certainly more than the physical, just because the miners are still so cheap, relatively speaking. And given the valuations and what we think gold could well do, there's still huge upside in these names, even if it's not as exciting as that, you know, five-lettered stock I've never heard of, which is exploring in Tanzania. But hopefully it works out.
Interesting, Mark. As you're speaking about trying to sleep at night and being comfortable with the investments, could you give us a little bit about how your investor psychology has changed over the years and maybe some of the lessons you've learned?
Oh, well, the lessons are endless, to be honest. I think having a good fundamental idea about something is not as relevant as beating the Dow when things aren't going well. You know, the average investor doesn't care about how good the idea is, you know, or it doesn't have very much patience. You know, if their friends telling them about how they're up, you know, X amount in the S&P or the Dow, and you're not doing as well because you're investing in gold, you know, they're not that interested anymore. So certainly timing is something which, one always aspires to be better at. But thankfully, the time is certainly now as far as this area is today. And what I have seen is that many investors whom have been, 50-50 on the gold idea and precious metals in general, sort of like, okay, Mark, you seem to know what you're talking about. Okay, we'll do some. Well, now they're starting to get it. You know, now they're sending me links to articles about the dollar, about gold, about the Federal Reserve balance sheet. You know, people are waking up and are seeing that, whoa, hang on a second. The forecasts for what would happen to the gold price are now looking much more reasonable and less out there than perhaps from their perspective it was before. So I am seeing certainly a change. You know, and that's what a bull market does to you, I think.
As we were speaking before the call, you're interested in some of the energy stocks as well. So could you give us a little bit about how you see the uranium sector developing?
Yeah, I mean, uranium, I mentioned this on my last interview, and there's not many producers of uranium in the world. You can really, list them on a piece of paper and see where, 75-80% of all the uranium in the world is coming from and what these different producers are up to right now. And the overhang, which was created from the Fukushima disaster, is slowly being eaten away from an inventory perspective. And right now, just using Cameco as an example, I don't own Cameco, but they've idled most of their production. And their joint ventures in Kazakhstan as well is also not running at full capacity. And so you've seen the uranium price bounce from about $23 to up to about $33. And that's kind of where it's hanging out right now. I mean, there's just no new uranium production coming on unless uranium's over $50. Just no projects out there that make any sense whatsoever. And, nuclear power is still a big part of the picture. While the West is decommissioning some power stations, China is opening new ones. So it's about, net-net, it's still some growth. And uranium seems to me like another asset where it's hard to tell the timing on it, but the odds that there's the lack of supply at some point that drives the price higher seems pretty likely. Question is when? I don't know, but sometime. And in the short run, it does seem like an area that's worthy of consideration just from a diversification perspective. And when that bull market really starts getting going, hopefully I'm smart enough to sort of add to it and increase my exposure there. But it certainly has a lot of potential. It's definitely worth putting on your watch list and some of the uranium names and kind of watch what's happening. And see if that equation starts to turn around. And I think a real signal would simply be uranium trading above $40. So when that happens, that's probably enough for me to think, okay, the supply is done. Now they're in deficit. Now what?
As we know, as anybody knows that has looked at the uranium space, it's a very opaque market to try and really understand. What are some good sources for you to try and understand that market and news about that industry?
I really follow two sources for this, and that's one is anything that Cameco says, because they've got their ear to the ground on so much of it. So simply listening to everything they have to say gives you a very, very good idea of what's going on. And then also NexGen Energy, which has a uranium deposit up there in Canada, very close to Cameco's, is also a pretty good source of information as well. So those are pretty much where I get most of my uranium info from.
Great. You were speaking before the call about you're very bullish on hard assets in general and particularly oil. So give us a little bit of your thesis on why oil and why now.
Well, I think energy is one of those things where, and I oil being the focal point of it, but you know, I could include nat gas as well, is one of those things where I feel as a value investor, I get drawn to it like a moth to the flame when something is getting very, very cheap and very hated. So that's where it started, really. It's like, okay, hang on a second. This area is getting absolutely blown to smithereens. Is Exxon going to go broke? No. Where is the value here? And as it turns out, there is quite a lot of value. It's been a bit of a good run off the lows lately. I mean, oil has gone from minus 50 to plus 40, which is crazy in the space of 3 months. So, you know, I'm not so sure if necessarily now is the exact moment to be buying more oil-related assets. But it's definitely worthy of consideration if prices look as reasonable as they did a few months ago again. I mean, the world is still heavily dependent on fossil fuels, and it's unlikely that that's going to change as quickly as the Tesla fans would think. There just simply isn't the infrastructure to handle everyone driving an electric car. That doesn't exist. And you know, one of the interesting things from that Exxon actually has, and you know, in one of their presentations, is they actually model a scenario in the future where there is 100% electric vehicles, and you'd be surprised at how much oil still needs to be consumed even with that. Oil gets used in a lot of stuff, and so there isn't this world where we're driving electric cars and now suddenly oil's out, that's it, we're never going to frack a well again. So when you've taken that into account, you're like, okay, well, it's not going to go away. What are the values like? And you've got a lot of free cash flow cows, really, in the majors in the oil space, that life isn't that great at $40, but they're still making money, still paying in many cases paying big dividends, and it's an area where there's really not a lot of interest and prices are cheap, so it has the potential to be an outperformer in a world where hard assets become in vogue again, which they've been out of vogue for so long. But with what the Federal Reserve is doing, one has to start to consider all things that cannot be tied down as being of interest to protect one's wealth in the long run.
As we wrap up, Mark, is there anything else you'd like to mention?
I think it's important for investors, certainly in precious metals, to be very, very careful with leverage or chasing, penny stocks or Robinhood. Do your research, get good advice, invest in companies with strong free cash flows and good balance sheets, and make sure that if you happen to share the opinion that it's worthy to have some protection against everything the Federal Reserve and the government are doing, that you do it in a manner that you win. You don't lose because you bet the house or because, you know, you took too much risk on a stock you didn't really know anything about. So I would certainly add that.
Great. Can you share with us where we can find more information about you, Mark?
You can find me on LinkedIn under my name, Mark McGarrion. I'm also on Twitter. I'm pretty much the only one, I think, not many Mark McGarrions in the world. So, yeah, you can Google me and track me down pretty easily if you want to have a chat.
Excellent. Thanks for your time today, Mark.
Thank you, sir.
This podcast is for general informational purposes only. Nothing on this podcast should be taken as investment advice. Guests on this show are not compensated for their appearance. Listeners are urged to educate themselves and make their own decisions. Do not base any investment decisions on the information contained. To view our full disclaimer, please visit our website.
Think you understand the junior mining sector and you think that the participants in the mining sector, junior mining sector, are good people and kind people, hit the bid.
How violent that term could be, it actually could be quite violent. It could be a rip your face off uranium rally.
And the world is always going to need raw material. It's going to need copper and gold and nickel and so forth.
Totally destabilized. Hey, troll, did you hear what's going on in Yemen?